Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about BMR and some replacement options. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at a new gene in wheat that could triple wheat yields. Egg History Minute, we'll talk about the history of BMR. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Feel Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueker, all with Tilth Agronomy. Brewer's bats are like the weather, turning cold.
It's very, maybe.
It's warming up today, so maybe.
Hey, they have to win today or the season
right,
is over.
Right, they're done.
They're done, yeah.
Yesterday, it was okay. We didn't have to win, but today, you have to win. So
it's like, I don't listen to sports talk radio. I know, Bill, you do.
Yep.
Is everybody, like, is it the stereotypical, well, this is a must-win situation? Like,
no, it's like, we've seen this coming now. Like, we were a very optimistic game one.
I wouldn't even say it was optimistic. Everybody was just like, there's a chance.
Yeah. Well, they had that really good double play, and that was like,
yeah,
it was a very cool thing to happen. And it's like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe.
Yeah, and Snell pitched well, but in the bottom of the ninth, you were one hit away from winning the game.
Right.
You could have won that game.
I like how you said hit, too, because literally.
Or get
think?
Hit. Yeah.
What do you think, Bill? So
literally.
Matt, the guy, Bryce Strang's up to bat.
Bases
bottom of the
juiced.
Ninth, bases loaded, full count.
Yep,
and two outs, and ball comes.
It wasn't a full count because then he would have walked.
Okay, sorry, you're right.
So full count was when he struck out.
So ball comes in, basically almost hits him in the knee, and he jumps out of the way. Doesn't take one for the team. So that's been the
takes one for the team.
Sure, if he would have walked, then he would
have tied it.
Yep.
So
yep.
If he would have got hit, they would have tied it. It was a 2-2 count at that point, I think.
That's been a fair, like, to me. So this player said it's a reaction. I just jumped out of the way. But Bill, you know from coaching,
yeah,
like they teach you how to take a baseball.
They do,
general,
but
right, like in this case, it was way out. Like he just had to kind of like turn, which in your knee.
And it would have hit. The hard part there, though, is it would have hit his back.
Right. His
it wasn't
back,
like
it was a weird.
You turn into it and you take it off the front butt cheek or the thigh or something. This was
he was already kind of like starting his swing and then.
Sure. So you would have
had to like take it in the back knee, which would have been.
The more egregious thing was the next pitch was a ball and
he swung
like 3 inches above the zone and he swung and missed. Like to me, fine. You reacted. You didn't want to get hit. You just, it happens, right? Like, but the next pitch, you're swinging off your shoes and out of your socks and game's
yep.
over.
Yeah.
So that's a roundabout story, Matt. That's the sports talk today is like, well, we've kind of seen this coming now.
Right.
Like, it was a good run. We beat the Cubs. Yay. And the Dodgers are just too good.
Thankfully, we beat the Cubs, and that was the coolest double play ever.
So a ground out double play.
That was the coolest.
To the wall.
So at the very least, we have the Bears equivalent of a Super Bowl.
Yes, we do. Brewers are, yes.
The Brewers won the playoff World Series.
Have you seen the Sal Frelick memes, though, of him looking all, like, with his face all, like, his hair is all disheveled after the ball hit his glove, it hit the wall, then he caught it, and he turns to throw it. If you haven't seen it, you got to look. There's like this really ugly, growly, his hair's all disheveled, like face. They got a snapshot of it when he's like turning to throw the ball back in. It's a hilarious.
Well, that is kind of cool, actually. Yeah. His glove's tucked, and he's like
getting ready to throw it. So the one on the right there, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty neat. His hat fell off, and it is great. But
yeah, at that moment, he's pissed he dropped a ball. He doesn't realize he's getting a double play.
Right, exactly. Because
it's just like, oh, my God, I just dropped. I mean, he saved a home run.
In reality,
probably
the way it turned out, no run scored, where if he would have caught it.
One run. Right.
One run would have
like
scored.
The best case.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but they're batting 9-89 right now. That's a 100 batting average.
He said that was the worst in playoff, like three games in a row in playoff history since like, which baseball takes forever, you know, played forever since like 1908.
Yeah.
White Sox. Like, they are that cold right now in that bat. So that, I mean, Dodgers pitching is also
very good.
Very very good, very well paid, all prepared for the playoffs. Like, they saved guys in preparations for this.
I remember, I think, Bill, you might have even mentioned on the podcast last week, wasn't it? Like, one of their pitchers is paid more than the entire Brewers organization.
Yeah.
They're... Schnell is paid more than the Brewers pitching staff. Like, him alone is paid more than what the Brewers whole staff makes. The pitching staff.
They were even, like, the guy that pitched in game two, they basically paid $50 million to get him out of his contract from a minor league team in Japan.
Japan, yeah.
And to get him here. Like, it's, like
that was just before he showed up on an airplane. They had to pay $50 million to just have the rights to him.
Right,
just
get a shot at it.
So, like, still a baseball fan, it's fine, but if they don't get a salary cap, it's kind of not fun anymore, because this David versus Goliath stuff, it's like, it's not even that anymore. David versus Goliath is like a strength battle, not we can just pay
all the best players.
Yeah, we can just pay for all the best.
No, it's always like blown my mind, and it's across most sports, but you know, just the amount of money.
Basically, in general, like right now, baseball's the only sport without a
salary cap.
Yeah,
I mean, just the salaries that these guys get paid.
Well, Bill,
pretty ridiculous.
You could our grandfather loved baseball.
Oh yeah,
all his brothers played. I mean, he kind of went to war, so he didn't play. But there was lore of. One of
his brother,
Uncle Jack, played minor league baseball, and like
he was a Cardinal.
Yeah, was a card, like, so baseball in his blood to the nth degree. And I would watch some baseball games with him when he was in his 80s and 90s. But in general, he stopped watching baseball. And he'd watch golf because he said, "I can't watch these guys get paid this much to play a game that it's a game."
Right.
Like, we loved, like, they're not playing for the fun of the game and because they love the game anymore. It's because of the
They're being
the
paid,
money.
Yeah. Ridiculous amounts of money.
And I mean, if he knew what they got paid now and saw, I mean, I mean, they were getting paid a ridiculous amount, you know, 20 years ago.
The thing that bothers me the most is, sorry to interrupt, Bob. The thing that bothers me the most is, like, what the Dodgers did with Ohtani's contract is ridiculous. They paid him, like, $750 million and then deferred.
Yeah,
all of it to when he's done playing. Like, really? Like, what are we doing here?
Right. Right. A lot of this isn't even money they're getting now. It's crazy. I mean,
he's making so much New Balance and everything else.
Right.
You know, he's not hurting.
That's a good point, too, is it's not only like they're overpaid just from the sport, but then they're treated like celebrities. And
right.
And some of them don't deserve it. Ohtani being one who is basically cheating and gambling on the sport and then had a fall guy.
And then the fall guy's in jail right now.
Yeah, so it's just such a tricky thing that way, too.
Good news, Todd, for your David versus Goliath is apparently we're headed for a lockout or a strike in 2027. And if the Brewers win, then it's like, it's saying like, oh, look, you can pay can pay nothing and still win. Yeah, so then this... David versus Goliath doesn't hold water, and they're just going to keep doing that. But with the Dodgers just pounding the Brewers, now it's that whole, like, see, these little guys can't compete. So, yeah, the Brewers are going to lose probably, but in the long run, it might be helpful to say we need some type of structure here that we can't give these guys guaranteed contracts for $750 million and then have these owners that just – pay a quarter of that. Like, if anything, it might say like a floor. Like, you have to pay $200 million. That's your floor.
Right. That's the other part, is to actually have a bottom too, which is unique. You know, like, hey, you gotta at least pay this much and you can't pay over this much.
And all I want is like, okay, like when Mizorowski in 3 years or whenever he's due to get a contract, we can't compete. He's just gonna go to the Yankees or the Mets or whatever, right? All I want is to like be in the mix to be able to keep some of these guys that are really good.
When I was watching Mizorowski pitch against the Dodgers, that's all I kept thinking is like, if you're the Dodgers fan or the Dodgers team, you're just like, oh, this is sweet. We get to watch our future prospect.
Yeah, right.
You know, he'll be on our team here in 3 years. And we
the Brewers are just making him good.
This is our minor.
For everybody else, this is playoff baseball. For the Dodgers, it's scouting.
Yes. These are all our future players. We'll just buy them. So. And it's weird that, like, the Yankees and the Mets, they overpaid teams, too, and they didn't
they
see,
don't. It's still about
coaching. It doesn't always work out.
You still have to be a good organization to be good, right?
Right.
The Mets pay more than anything, and they suck.
Right.
But that's more on the Mets than it is on the system.
Right. It's still not a fair system that way. Yeah.
The good news, though, is last time we played the Dodgers in 19 in the NLCS, we were right there. And then get your heart ripped off game seven.
Yeah.
This is like, you see the cliff coming, and you're like, okay, I'm ready for the cliff. And
you're just hoping, for at least one win, maybe.
Now we want a gentleman's sweep would be
right.
Great.
Yeah,
like realistically, best case scenario is you win two, so you get back to Milwaukee.
That'd be fine. I'm with you though, Bill. If we're gonna lose anyway, I don't want any hope, because then that's just more that you're gonna be let down.
Yeah. So. At least if you lose in Milwaukee, then Milwaukee benefits from the tourism.
Agreed. You get more,
and it's not as far to go home for those guys.
Make the Dodgers fly back.
Here's another change in baseball that I think is just in basketball. I think is still this way too, but. On a seven-game series, they used to be two games at, say, the home first team, the better team, then two games away, then it went 1-1-1. So, now it's 2-3-2, and I also think that's it's a dumb system that way, in that, like, it's actually somewhat more of an advantage, but in a way it is, like, If you're that sort of what I call the away team, so you get the three games in a row at home where you could start building back momentum and stuff, like you just got to steal one of those games
right
in the first two and
you're close out at home.
You're good. Yeah. So it that way too, I actually think losers always get to make excuses. And so I'm not saying this is an excuse. We still would have lost. But it's still, to me, either they got to change it to, like, my theory would be three at home, then three away, if you're going to do that, and then one more home for game seven, or go back to the old 2-2.
And it's about travel, right? Because in baseball, they give you the day off.
These guys travel.
Yeah, I know.
At first I thought, you're right, it's more about the days off, what travel.
But they're finishing in, like, they're going to play in Milwaukee on a Sunday afternoon, and then fly to Atlanta in a regular season game.
Right.
Right. They're going to finish in Milwaukee and then fly to Atlanta and play the next day.
Yes. So they could figure that out.
Right.
But yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
What do you mean they don't take the bus anymore?
No. They don't even probably take the bus to Chicago.
Yay, so, sports. That's, so, yeah. Are you?
You could probably even go to a five-game series, and I always thought it was interesting how, you're in baseball. For one, it's a lot of games.
It's a lot of games.
Like it's a ridiculous amount of games. You're playing
182. They could cut that back by 20 or 30 easily.
Right. You're playing basically from April till now. I mean, if you do well into October, so majority of the year, there's 4 months off really, but between. When they report for,
it's mid February when they show back up.
Basic training,
spring training.
Like, so you get 4 months of the year they're not playing, compared to like basketball, football. Like football runs from essentially August. Maybe you would consider July when they do the early training camps and stuff till January. So I mean, it's half a year maybe. So just it's a long season. So a lot of things can happen in that time. And then the series, because I'm trying to remember now, most of the time it's, 3 years? What's the most they play in the regular season series? Four?
Yeah.
Four.
Four.
And that's not super very often.
Right. Yeah. Usually three. And then you get to like playoffs. It's like, yeah, you're used to playing these three game series. Guess what? Now we're going to like double it.
Yeah.
And triple it almost. Like
you get sick of, you get sick of seeing the opposing player. Like, you know that team just as good as your own after 3-4 games of playing those guys.
Right. That's always kind of just been interesting to me how that whole system works of like, no, we can't just play each other like, and they'll play the same teams how many times throughout, you know,
yeah,
a season two. It's like, it's almost like the calculus of trying to figure out who's the better team. Like, we have to play each other so many times to have so many points of data to decide who's better. And then when it gets to playoffs, it's like, but now we're going to only play like 5 games first, then 7 games. Then.
And here's what's bonkers about this, Matt, is the Brewers swept the Dodgers in the 6 games in the regular season.
Right. No, and that's...
But
yeah,
2 of their best pitchers didn't even pitch. So that's where in the regular season, like, oh, yeah, we beat them 6 games. That's great. But you can catch a pitcher, you know, like he pitched the day before you got there. Or he's pitching the day when you leave. So,
right.
We're going to see Snell. If there's no way it's getting to game 7. But if it gets to game 7 or 7 or 6, you're going to see those first two guys again.
Right.
You're going to see their best pitchers twice.
And yeah, so that, it's always kind of blown me away of like how much time you spend just to get this far. And then it's like, well, yep, mathematically we got to do this, but just because it's possible doesn't mean it's going to happen. Like, I don't know. It just, this isn't a surprise. We talked about this last week. It's not really a surprise that the Dodgers were going to beat up.
No.
I mean, you had hope, but at the same time, it's an interesting sport. It's a very old sport, like you said, Todd. And I think they've struggled for a long time to figure out how to make it more like this time of year. I think they don't have a problem selling seats, but
during the
most of the season,
it is fun. Comparing it to agriculture, it is a fun. It's to me, it's the only sport that does like they start in May. You know, that's about when we're planting, and then you have, you know, through the season, it kind of goes right with our growing season, which is fun.
The optimism of spring.
Right.
It's a good new year. Everything's greening up. Everything's starting, and then it matures as the...
Yeah, and then even now, you know, soybeans sort of harvest, but in general, corn harvest starts in October, and that's when baseball isn't, like you say, these series take 7 games, and most time... By the end of corn harvest, you're like, oh, my God, I'm sick of looking at corn. But at the beginning, it's fun. You know, and it's fun throughout harvest, especially. It's always
so
fun.
By the end of the 7 games, you're sick of looking at Ohtani.
But you have a better chance of having a good harvest than a good true. Playoff baseball season.
Hopefully every year you make it to harvest and make it in.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get into our topic for today. So
while I'm not freaking out about the Brewers, I am freaking out about BMR.
Yeah, there's a countdown there. It's not not that long before BMR is. From a majority of producer standpoint, I mean, there still will be some form of BMR somewhere, but not the BMR we're used to.
I was thinking this on a big picture, Bill, too. Like, this technology is sort of being taken away from us. And we've had that with, like, the Dicamba and soybeans, and we've had it. And that was kind of a sudden takeaway 2 years ago when all of a sudden there was a court case and then we couldn't use it. But can you think of any other technology that's sort of we've had for, say, 20 years? You know, we've had for sure 20 years. I mean, it's gotten way better. And
Twinkies. reminds me of Twinkies.
Twinkies
were going away, remember, a few years ago.
Are they away? I swear they're...
Nope. Oh, okay. Well, they did go away for a short amount of time. Then someone else came in and actually...
And made a new Twinkie.
And at least with Twinkies, you could buy them and...
Right, and that was the difference in this story.
Years. Oh, don't you think people are going to try to buy BMR corn and store it as long as...
Right.
Yeah. Actually, I can't think of it now, but there was an insecticide way early, like 20 years ago.
Oh, Lors Man.
No, it was a planter box, like for
like in-furrow.
In-furrow, and it did really good for cranes.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I can't think of it now. But anyway, we had a couple guys that just bought like 20 cases of that, and it was good for like 10 years. Like they just
could use it, and then it went away.
DDT?
Well, it actually like wasn't good on cranes, so that's why they...
Right, they went to Avapel now. So
Right, it was detrimental to cranes.
Yeah, maybe that's a good point, too. Which things have we gotten taken away because of environmental reasons?
I mean, atrazine prohibition areas, right?
And so, like, some of those things are, like, legit. This is corporate decision-making, not because the tool is hurting something out and about. So, yeah, a tool that... And it's a very niche tool.
Right. I was going to say, we're not in our area... For the industry we have, it's a tool that guys like, but it's not something that every farmer everywhere uses.
No, an Iowa corn farmer does not
hate this.
Yes. Well, right. And he's even going to realize this is going away. So that's what's maybe unique about it, too, is like one of the comparisons for dairy farmers, especially, would be BST going away.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, I do think this is very similar.
I think
to like, that and what it does, you know, BST got you more milk. This gets you more milk. So like the similarities to that are going to be where if you're trying to manage through this, remember just think back to how it went with BST. What did you do? What management things did you change? And BMR, I remember one guy that lost BST, one of his management changes was to plant BMR corn and BMR corn. So I think that's somewhat ironic, was that, yes, the solution is now you're going to have to kind of go on to the next thing.
The hard part, too, is like, so in early March, Corteva announced that they're just going to be done with BMR. That's kind of what we're talking about here by 2030. So we're like, okay, we got kind of 5 years to figure this out. So we thought, right? We thought, okay, we got this out. Well, then all of a sudden, I'm listening to some seed dealers and I'm listening to co-op people and they're talking to my growers like, yeah, next year's it. And I kind of like double-taked. I'm like, what are you talking about here? We got 5 years yet. And they're like, nope, it's going to be gone. So then you kind of dig into it a little bit more and kind of the gist is so next year for 26, we're pretty much good. The BM3s, so that's the smart stacks, the old mycogen side. We're pretty much, everything's good. Might be one or two that are you can't get because of production or whatever. The BM1s, the Corteva side, the Qs, that's all fine. You can get all those you want. So the BM3s, I have a lot of acres. Pretty much all of my acres are not quite, but all are BM3s because the guys like, it's better fiber digestibility. It's not as good as agronomically as the BM1s are. That's a little better yield, better agronomics. So that's the differentiation between the two. So then you get to planting year 27, and the BM3s, the Brevant's only going to have two smart stacks. The 101 day, which is great, and the 108 day, they're both very good hybrids. That's all you're going to get. So if you want to hang on one more year, you got to be able to plant those two. And the reason is the Smart Stacks agreement is ending. So that's why they're not obviously going to extend this agreement to go another whatever years. And then the BM1s you still can get. Once you get to 28, the BM3s are gone. Like, you're done. You're gone. The BM1s, the chromes, you're going to get, if there's a farmer demand, you're probably going to be able to get some. I think in the next 2 years, you're going to see the Corteva folks asking farmers how much longer you're going to hold on. Because I think, Todd, you're either going to have guys that are going to grip this sucker like it's their, you know, last dying wish and they're going to hold on to as long as they can. Or guys are going to be like, well, I might as well just go off now.
It's because, either rip the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And be done, or you're going to nurse this wound like no other. And there'll be some in the middle, but at the same time, you're either going to want to find and move on from a new strategy, or part of the strategy could be, yes, I'm going to buy as much of this seed and just save it as long as I can and just
break in
with it.
That isn't the best strategy either, right? Having all this extra seed.
Can I just ask quick, are you guys surprised at this? Because I'm not.
Absolutely not surprised.
I actually told a farmer, I said, they said 2030, but I would be surprised if it makes it that long. Because for exactly these reasons, they've got these agreements and other things. Like, there's no way it makes it out other than if enough people, if they have enough in production, and they kind of, a couple companies kind of said this when we met with them for seed meetings, was, if enough people are switching and they, like, overproduce enough, there will be a supply, maybe a little bit further, but.
Right. I think I'm more, it doesn't surprise me, Matt. No, because this is a corporate decision, right? When you look at Corteva's sales of corn, BMR's got to be, I can't even probably put my fingers close enough together to show you how much of a market share it is, right? Right. It's so small of an acre. It's such a big, but for us, it's such a big.
I agreed. I don't think it's a big market. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, Matt. And I agree with you, Bill, that to them, this is such a blip. However, and it says it right from their March 13th news release, is Corteva is committed to delivering corn silage products that meet farmers' evolving needs. It's the first line. And so you sort of thought like they'd give it a chance to go somewhere to do something, not just totally.
They didn't say which farmers, though.
Right.
Because I would argue that all my farmers that buy BMR have zero evolving needs. They want a higher yielding product, but they want it in the BMR.
Right.
Like that's their need. It's not that.
Right. So I that is what's, I think some farmers at that point thought, like, maybe this technology would be sold to a different, there in March, there was still some sort of maybe this was just some signaling that yes, this isn't, but what I didn't understand or think of at the time was how the traits matter in all this.
Right.
And
because you can get BMR.
And in there, they've got a frequently asked questions. That wasn't one of them. How are the traits? The traits part of this matter. Like you said, they got agreements with other companies for traits. They've got their own traits. How would they sell this product because of the traits and the technology?
Right. They'd have to license everything else with it. And,
right.
Yeah.
And I don't know which of these you could sell as a BMR conventional to a different farm, and then they would trade it up late. However, I don't, because what's odd about this too is we've always known it's more poor agronomics. We've been, that's always a tricky part in any corporate decision too, is the same corporate people that were, the same people at these companies that were telling us hey, BMR is good because yes, there's a little bit of a yield blip, a little bit, but you get all this quality. Now it's we're getting rid of it because that yield blip and it sucked. And it's okay, but we were managing through that and we understood it. So,
and the irony for this year is one farm I work with that uses BMR got 5 to 6 tons more this year.
Correct.
Than ever before. So
did really well.
Did really well this year.
Really well. I had some hit 30 ton corn silage. Large scale
BMR,
yeah, did really well. So that part too is, I would agree, it didn't have much of a yield hit, and that's hard on a year where they sunset it. That's tricky.
So that's the bummer part of it all. That's the timeline. So if guys are looking to buy seed here shortly, and I've heard growers say that the seed folks are out asking for orders, so that's coming quick. That's your options right now. So you can either hold on for a year or two, or maybe it's time just to look to other options. So what are the other, we got to go into the other options, right? We got to talk about where we're going to go. So
5 letters here just for everybody out there in Packerland and yourself today. RELAX. Relax. We're going to be okay.
I think we're going to be okay.
Do you think the lineman that tackled him after the touchdown celebration played him that clip? Because he did not relax after
that. He did not last night. He was pretty fired up about going to the ground at 41 or whatever he is.
Not quite 42, because it was December, I think.
Yep. So maybe I need to take that advice, Todd. I'm all fired up about this. I need to take that advice.
I would agree of with what you're saying, Bill. Is like, I think there's parts of this now where you got to... The tool is gone. Nothing that these companies, that people that sell these products can even do to bring it back either. You know, they your seed sales guy that's giving you this information, he's just the messenger at this point.
Right.
He can't help it. You know, one frustrating part in the grand scheme of things is with all the consolidation in agriculture, and then in this case seed, is larger companies buy up all these things, and then when it's not going well, or in this case it's a blip, it's like, well, if it's a blip, why'd you buy that product?
Right.
You know, why
it's not worth our time.
Right. Why did you focus years in creating that product? You know, in this case they bought one of them and created their own. Why'd you spend years doing all that and then to go, well, it's just a blip?
Well, let's like rewind it 15 years and talk about Micogen. That's what, like, yes, their company was founded on corn silage, right?
Right.
I mean, our local rep was like, he didn't even really focus on the grain corn and the beans that they had to sell.
No, it was
TMF, TMF and BMR. That's all he talked about,
right?
Because that's what they were good at.
Right.
Yep.
So that's one hard part in the consolidation. We think of what consolidation didn't do. This is also, to me, a newer thing of like them is larger companies buying up all this stuff. And then all of a sudden when they got to cut the fat and trim the fat, some of that stuff they just bought gets trimmed away. And you go, well, why'd you even buy it? You know, what's going on? And again, I feel bad for the local salespeople and, you know, in the state agronomists, the local salespeople, all the kind of like, you know, the people involved in these companies that they've been, this is a large part of their market share,
right,
that they were selling, that all of a sudden is just, it's like, oh yeah, we don't have that anymore. And you go, well, okay. But yeah, we have this other stuff. Yeah, I know I'm selling some of that other stuff, but my customer was used to this.
Right. And now they're probably worried, like, I might lose market share to something else because I don't have this to offer anymore.
Right. So that part of all this is like, I think your Rogers relax is a good, is as farmers, as people, we do got to take a step back and realize, like, we're buying this from people still. Like, there are salespeople. They're doing their best. And this is a time to sort of work with them. What is the next step? What's your plan? How do we do this? Show me some data.
Yep.
Please show me data. Like, how do we go from...
We know the numbers.
Right.
We know the BMR numbers.
Right.
Right? We got to be as close to that as we
can.
And I think this decision was five levels above the people that
100%
farmers are going to see, right?
Right.
In the corporateness of the world.
I think that's the tricky part. This is all these salespeople are just as devastated as you, the farmer, going like, I can't do anything about it. I like these products. I mean, like we just said, they spent years selling you these products and it's just pulled away on them. So that part is tricky. So then I think you go through these steps of, like, when we first heard about it in March, it was like sort of the denial phase, like, oh, they'll just sell it
very
to somebody
denial
else, or it'll last all 5 years. And yeah, I think we're definitely into the stage, like, now we got to be in the stage of, and I think we already were looking all summer, like, what do we do next?
Yeah.
How do we get good quality corn?
I'm in the
feed for
anger phase.
Is that anger? Yeah.
Well, and BMR, it was a love-hate relationship for a lot of people. Like, there's the love of the benefit, but the hate of, you know, how many times over the last few days and last few years have we heard, you know, oh, it's going to go down. I mean, farm I work with, like, BMR went down again.
It's like, a princess, right? Like, right. We heard that too from the seed meetings we went through the last 3 days. It's kind of a princess corn. You got to baby it, right?
Yep. So obviously, other people are managing silage without BMR. So It's not like corn silage is going away. We're not
right.
Yeah, it's not the end of
no. And this
the end of
affect,
corn silage production.
It's not affecting every farmer we deal with.
Right? No, it's actually. I mean, and I think Bill probably the reason you're in that anger phase yet, and I'm into the like bargaining phase.
You do pull
of,
it up
of
the,
grief,
five,
yeah.
the five stages of denial.
Of, yeah, so like. Next, we get into acceptance, so hopefully we can...
Sure.
I think I'm more into the accepting part, but I also don't have as many clients as effective.
You have a lot of growers that buy other feed from other sources,
right.
So it's harder to do that. I have a lot of growers that supply themselves, so they can...
Planted a lot of BMR.
Right.
So I think that's going to be tricky with this, too, is you're going to talk to a farmer and some... I mean, even within dairy country, there's going to be a lot of farmers completely unaffected.
Yeah,
yeah.
By it,
which is good,
and then you've got some that are very affected by it. So it is going to be one of those things where, yeah, you might be talking to a farmer friend and being like, "What's your deal with it?" You know, like I've made milk fine without it for a long time. I tried it; it wasn't, and so yeah, you might want to talk to other farmer friends about that and see what they're doing
and yeah,
how to go about it.
Nobody likes starting over. And I'm sure for some of these BMR guys, it feels like starting over. But, and there's, you know, there's reasons they chose BMR over these other options that are out there. And so now it's like, what's my second choice kind of thing. But, I mean, there's going to be benefits. Just like I said, you know, it was love-hate with BMR because they're you hated the agronomics, but you loved the benefit. Well, now... You might not get as much of a benefit, but it's probably going to be easier to manage. Less chance of, depending on which option you go with, less chance of, you know, down corn or other issues.
Yeah,
that can be affected. So what are our different options
here? I think we got five, maybe four. I'm trying to figure out the one of them if it's like the others. But there's like four or five different options. The way companies are kind of taking their path to how they're going to help the farmer get through this, or even obviously they're selling it to other customers. But the big guys, the Bayers and the Cortevas, those companies, they're just going to have grain corns that are very digestible. Simple, right? Just we're going to find the hybrids that are the most digestible, and those are the ones they're going to sell, and they're going to sell it in all their names, right? It's going to be tonnage or IDF or whatever they want to call it. That's what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, so that's a good way to say it, too, is in general, all these companies have sort of a subset that they've found compared to their own genetics. That's one key thing. And I think they could try to compare it to others' genetics, too. But in general, it's the cream of the crop of their genetics, of what's really good in tonnage, starch, and then, you know, the fiber digestibility.
Yep.
So... If yeah, like you say, Bill, I think we've got, you know, HiDF, TMF from Brevant, you know, all the companies kind of have.
And that's where, like, I'm trying to figure out is, like, the Prairie Estates route where they're just focusing on a very small amount of hybrids but that are very digestible. The starch is very digestible. Is that kind of what Bayer Corteva is doing, or are they a category in themselves? And I kind of think that it's like a one, you know.
You do have
1A, 1B kind of thing.
Yep. In there is these sort of subset of companies that all their focus is silage. So those companies might be one to turn to talk to say, try some of their genetics. I think that's the other part. We still have, I mean, I know there's enough data out there in 2025, but 2026, we're still going to have BMR available, and you're still going to be able to, I think this is the time to be talking, getting other varieties on your farm. And talking to companies like Prairie Estates, who's like a focused on silage company, and then comparing that with feed tests to other silage you have on your farm, and then maybe trying some of the other, you know, sort of what I would call like corn silage specific corns from other brands that are kind of shown to be a better corn silage. Now, I think what's tricky with that is a lot of those are, they're one, they're comparing to themselves, but even if they're not comparing to themselves, they're just picking the best within their own genetic pool.
Yeah.
So that part of it is they're not always, say, specifically breeding corn silage, but it's like, well, this one ends up being a pretty good corn silage, and it just happens to be good quality, too, and I think there's ways to get that. So, yeah, and then even within company you have, like, let's talk Brevant or Dairyland, they've got sort of their, Brevant has TMF, then they've got FQ, which is sort of like a forage quality demarcation as well. So it's a kind of a really good grain corn, but actually it's a really good forage quality one to it too. So kind of reading through the books this fall, checking what you're sort of comfortable with maybe switching to, or try, maybe not even switching to yet, but just trying for next year. And yeah, going that way. So I think you're right though, Bill, that's kind of one category of just, obviously they're not BMRs, but they're cool. Really good.
Really good.
Good quality. And would you agree, like, I know we talked to BM3, like one of the things to think about is like the BM3s, those were the better digestible ones. We're never going to get that again. Like that's gone.
Yeah. Yep.
That's gone. Like it's, we're never going to see those kind of NDFD numbers. It's gone. But then the BM1s, those were sort of your better yield and agronomics and good quality. I think we're never going to like maybe hit those, but we're going to be able to get closer.
100%. We can approach.
Yes. So like that's the other part, is maybe resetting your goal, in that our goal used to be 65 plus NDFD. That's what those BM3s could hit. And the BM1s were like 62 to 68, somewhere in there. And we can still try to hit like between 60 and 65 and try to avoid under 60.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be something to look at as you're choosing other hybrids, is talking to your seed salesman, like, can you get me some yield and quality data on that and seeing where those sort out.
The other approach is what Syngenta's been doing for a while. I don't have any experience with the Syngenta or Golden Harvest Enogen.
See, and that's wild.
I know, Todd, you have a while. You have a ton. So that's an enzyme that breaks starch down into sugars more efficiently. So it's not so much better forage quality, but it's a more efficient approach to silage to get that cow to produce more milk.
So one of the things to think about as we're talking about all these is none of them are BMR. So to compare them to BMR, they're not. Like that's a recessive gene that changes the lignin in your plant and the fiber digestibility of your plant. So none of them are exactly that. So that's one thing to think about. Like if people say, well, no, we have something like BMR. Yes, it's like BMR, but it's not the same. So Enogen would be in that category, is that alpha amylase enzyme. It's going to make it, basically you're going to, one advantage you have to have less carryover of silage. It'll be more readily available to feed to your cattle and you won't see that drop in milk. In general, they're put into very good hybrids, or they're bred specifically for that, and they're just very good hybrids.
Are they still purple?
One thing, and then, yeah, you get the every...
You get the funny-looking corn.
Yes, you get the decorative corn in there. That it is neat. I still think it's
What's fun, the percentage? Because like, it used to be a lot, right?
Yeah, now, like, isn't it just, like, every so often you get, like, a cob?
That's right, it's the full cob. Full cob versus, so it first started,
individual kernels.
Like, you'd have individual kernels in there on every plant. Now it's sort of the full cob, and... It seems like it's in the refuge corn somehow, but it's like 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be there, and yeah, it's something honestly you don't even really notice as like you're chopping it. But it's one of the alternatives. Picking one that maybe has really good fiber digestibility, also has that starch conversion,
and
could be a way.
If you got some beef cows. That's really what it was.
It's kind of made
for beef cows. And if you're a grain farmer and you want some to go to the ethanol plant, that was also what the intent of this was. So you have some options with Enogen and where you want to take
it. And you can feed it as high moisture corn.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
You just can't sell it, right, to the
right.
A local
right.
Grain.
You cannot go to the elevator.
That's the wrong
place. You can go to the ethanol plant. You can feed it as
moisture. They don't want it. because
they don't want.
No, literally, they can't.
Right. Yeah. They don't want their tortilla chips to fall to be apart mushy. In a bag.
Yes,
that would be bad to have your Doritos a pile of mush. So that's approach. I will call it approach number two. Third approach is what the Partners brand is doing. A very obviously, that's a smaller company, not in the market share size of our big guns. But they actually have some high oil corn that they're mixing with. You can either buy the whole, it's a two varieties that are high oil. You can either buy them individually or you can mix them with other hybrids. And the approach that the salesman that we talked to is mainly is they're mixing them. And basically the high oil is, it's more energy in that corn. More energy convert, that would be converted to more milk because you have more energy dense feed. You're going to get more milk out of that. So that's a very small, I know Todd and I have one grower
worked with it and it's working well. Varieties work good. It's a potential solution to this change is planting in there too. You could plant, sort of whole fields at times and mix them in, or just have this where it's kind of mixed in the bag at 30%, and just a way to get more energy into that. And they are on good, they're on good hybrids as well. That's going to help.
You're not going to have the trait options, but there are still some above ground and Roundup traits. So you do have some of that available. So that's another approach. I guess the last approach is we still have one company that I know of, and maybe there's some others, but that has BMR. It's not the genetics or the traits that Corteva has, but the Kingfisher brand has two hybrids available. Very long day. They have one that's, they don't even like give you a day. It's a range. It's 109 to 115 day is their first hybrid, and their second hybrid is 115, 117. And I did have one grower that planted that shorter day one in the field, and it acts exactly like it says. It's everything else was chopped in the bunker, and that was green yet. So it is really long. We're going to get, he did separate it and take feed samples, so we're going to get some samples on it if it's still good. But it's not the genetics that you're used to.
Right. So that is, obviously this is still BMR, but it's not maybe as good a genetics. It's longer day almost than you think.
Yeah.
So there is still companies that are selling. So that's kind of in this King's Agri Seeds brand. And then underneath them is Kingfisher and Redtail that you can get BMR still, they have it available. That'd be one really good one to try some on your farm to see, then have something to compare to, have something to compare the agronomics.
And those have zero traits.
Right.
So
you're talking to conventional corn.
Conventional corn. So now you got to spray conventionally. We got to make sure if we have Roundup corn on the farm, we're back to.
Yeah, don't mix them.
We're back to like 1999, 2000 in my day, Todd, when like guys were grabbing wrong seed and all of a sudden you had like four rows of live corn and two rows of dead corn because your son grabbed the wrong bags of seed when you asked him to grab them and filled the planter, the hoppers, incorrectly. So you got to watch some of that and just be very good about cleaning your planter out because obviously we don't want to have, dead corn. And the one, actually one I missed and Todd just alerted us to.
Well, I was going to bring this one up too.
Good, Matt. Go ahead.
The things that aren't necessarily right there yet, but there's potential for the future is like the short corn, the Preseon, is they're looking at potential silage benefits with that corn. And so, yeah, I see Todd wrote that in as well. So we still need more data on that, but there's a potential, another option there as well.
I actually had one grower split planter it this year, and I looked on their John Deere data. And as long as it was calibrated correctly, the Preseon actually out-yielded the 93-day BMR in the field. So it was definitely, it's six, it ain't bigger than six
it's small.
Feet.
Yeah, right. It's neat short, to look at, actually, yeah.
Lives up to the name short.
Yes.
Yeah, I got to walk a plot. It wasn't on one of my farms, but not too far from here. And yeah, it is interesting to see how different, you know, it is compared to other corn with it. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see the quality side of that, like what the silage comes
right
back.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. So I guess after saying all that, Todd, I should just take Roger's advice and
relax. Yeah.
Relax.
I think this is, it'll be a good opportunity for us to find other things. The one other, maybe the last note to talk about is please start having conversations with your dairy nutritionist, because on the agronomic side, this will be a change for your agronomist, but it'll actually be a bigger change for your nutritionist.
Huge change.
Right. Yeah. So
they drove the BMR bus.
Yes. Right. Right. That's a good point.
We were just a stop on the way and had to deal with the ride.
Right. Right. We were driving the bus during the growing season, but then after that, it wasn't really our choice to drive that bus. It was fine. Like, we figured out how to grow it for the dairy and for the nutritionists, but this is going to be something that you're really going to have good conversations with your nutritionists, probably, and your agronomist. You know, this is bring everybody, your whole team in, and let's start talking solutions that will fit. Because I think there's a number of solutions out there. You need to pick the ones that are going to fit Free Farm and maybe start having a strategy. So obviously we talked about what Corteva's phase out strategy was. Like, you need a phase out strategy as well, or phase in.
Yep.
So is that, you know, and here's what something could look like in 2026. We're going to plant these X amount of hybrids, these different uses of other products to try to get to that quality. Then check how that quality is doing. Other, you know, there's some other avenues to look at. So.
All right. Well, there you go. There's some things to think about when it comes to the end of the BMR era, as we move into the next phase of corn silage and how you may have to adjust if you are a BMR grower. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. Maryland scientists have found a gene that could triple wheat yield. University of Maryland researchers discovered the gene that makes a rare form of wheat grow three ovaries per flower instead of one, since each ovary...
What was that, Matt? That's wild.
Oh, sorry. So ovaries are things in the female that allow them to reproduce.
What's so normal? How many?
Uno.
One.
They got... In wheat.
In wheat, it's one. And I think most most animals, it's somewhere in the 1 to 3 range.
Okay.
In this case, there is a rare version of wheat that gets three. So each ovary...
These look... the pig. Sorry, I can't even... I'm like
your
a kid.
Mind is blown.
Clearly, you're a child issues. In sex ed class.
You are like a child. Yes, I will agree with that.
The pictures they are showing of this, you got to Google, because the wheat head is wild looking. It is cool. This is going to be some neat stuff. All right.
So each ovary can potentially develop into a grain of wheat. So that means the gene could help them grow much more wheat per acre. Special trait of growing three ovaries per flower was initially discovered in a spontaneously occurring mutant of common bred wheat, but it isn't clear what genetic changes led to the new trait. UMD team is creating a highly detailed map of the multi-ovary wheat's DNA and comparing it to regular wheat. They discovered the normally dormant gene Wuschel D1 was switched on in the multi-ovary wheat. The short for that is WUS D1, which is somewhat unfortunate. When WUS D1 is activated in early flower development, it enlarges the flower-building tissues, enabling them to produce extra female parts like pistils or ovaries. If breeders can control or mimic this trick, they could design new wheat varieties that grow more kernels per plant. Even small gains in the number of kernels per plant could translate into a huge increase in food supply. So yeah, as Todd mentioned, there are some pictures in this article, and they do have a very packed looking. Like, I was thinking more along the lines of like it would almost get like three heads.
Right.
But it doesn't really look that way. It's more like it's just kind of jumbled all on the single
head.
It's
like a tiller.
Right. So, yeah, be interesting to see where that goes.
It's like you imagine the, yeah, where the one kernel comes out and just imagine three kernels.
Right,
in that
space.
Spot.
Yep. So, yeah. All right. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So, since we're talking BMR, makes sense to hit on the history of BMR. So, it's made strides over a 90-year period, and that was as of 2014. So, dairy producers across the country who feed BMR corn silage are building on many years of research, almost 100, and development. BMR was first found as a naturally occurring gene mutation in dent corn in 1924 at the University of Minnesota St. Paul. Leaves of BMR corn featured a distinct brownish-colored midrib vein. But the most meaningful feature for dairy producers is the low lignin content in the BMR stock. Lower lignin means better fiber digestibility for cows. Although BMR corn silage is somewhat widely used, I think it, as we talked, it's a niche market among dairy producers. It wasn't immediately accepted by many dairy producers. Since the discovery of BMR, corn breeders and nutrition researchers have learned the best ways to utilize the forage and prove value to dairy operations. So BMR has had potential from the beginning, but researchers recognized the significance of the gene mutation and did not really start studying the benefits until the 1970s. At that time, researchers conducted feeding studies using four known BMR gene mutations, BM1, BM2, BM3, and BM4. Discovered the BM3 gene had the dramatic advantage in digestibility with the lowest lignin over the other mutations. So far, BM1 is the only other one commercially available. We kind of talked about that earlier, the BM3s and BM1s, how they'll carry through in the next few years. Early BMR feeding trials with BM3 showed increases as high as 6 to 7 pounds of milk per cow per day, significant improvement compared with conventional corn. Cargill began its breeding program in the 1980s, introducing the first BMR corn silage to the market on a very small scale in 1996. So, yeah, as far as commercial production, 96 to 2026-ish, 27. Will be the lifespan, but so there you go. There's some thoughts on BMR and how we got to the BM1, BM3 varieties that are available today.
It's wild to me that
not tomorrow.
Yeah, but right.
Not tomorrow. Yesterday,
and they were like 1924, and literally like almost 100 years later.
Yep.
I mean, it was 2025, but like 100 years later, this
gone.
So the it's wild that it's that old of a technology, too. This isn't... Right.
But it wasn't really commercially produced until...
Right.
Starting in the 80s, but really widely available in the 90s, so...
As my sons would say, BMR is cooked.
It's cooked.
It's cooked, yeah.
Yep.
Is it still... What's the next thing to have the Riz, Bill?
Oh, I can't even wrap my head around
not
that.
Not BMR.
Something with 6-7.
Yep.
Matter tons.
That's not enough.
No, dry matter tons.
Well, right, but we want more.
We want more 9. Still, yes.
Yes.
We want 9.
All right. Anyway, thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's really easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts or on your Android phone. Download an app like Podcast Addict or Spotify. So we had some exciting news a couple weeks back that were available on Spotify. So, yeah, everybody's listening on that. So if you're not, try out Spotify. Tell a farmer friend about Spotify. And please rate and review our podcast. We would take all that. That actually helps push us to the top. We don't have any ads. We don't ask for any money. All we ask is for that because all these new podcasts have to, the more you rate, the more review, the more actually our name gets to other places. Then they put it in the algorithm goes through that, and we get to other people. So that'd be great. You can also follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our Cool Beans. That's Corny with some current events. So Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. Some farmers are increasing cover crop acres to cut fertilizer costs and help boost their soil health. Planting more cover crops this fall is one way corn and soybean growers can address some 2026 nutrient needs if you're looking to trim expenses. So how can you trim fertilizer costs and still provide adequate nutrients for corn and soybeans next season? One solution is to consider planting some cover crops this fall. A recommendation coming from David Hula, the reigning world corn yield record holder. Nitrogen, potash, boron, sulfur are all mobile nutrients. So if you plant a cover crop, it's going to pick up those nutrients. And then when you kill that cover crop, you can recycle that residue that was left over or the residual nutrients that were left over, explained Hula, who farms near Charles City, Virginia. Cover crops can scavenge for nutrients from previous crops, store them, and then release them for the following seasons, a process that can help reduce the synthetic fertilizers. Hula adds that corn and soybean growers don't need to be using no-till on your farm to benefit. You can strip till into the cover crops, or early in the spring, you can work the cover crops in to get benefits as well. Randy Doughty says one of the benefits he's seen in is that microbial activity likes to colonize around a living root mass. So, you know, it always helps our early season tissue sample values go up whenever we've had a cover crop, according to Doughty. So if guys can at least on bean ground where they've harvested get some cover crop in and get it up and going from a biological play and nutrient available standpoint, it's a no-brainer. So it's one thing that with the cover crops that I didn't see mentioned in here is also to think about when you're terminating. If you're looking for that benefit, you're going to want to terminate on the earlier side just to get that to cycle through in the season. Because if you let, especially something like rye, get really big and head out, it's going to take too long. The carbon to nitrogen ratio, it's going to take too long to break down to really get a lot of benefit. So be good to find some help with that. If you're not familiar with cover crops, talk to a farmer neighbor, your agronomist, someone at the NRCS when the government reopens. Just would be good to have a conversation with someone who has a little bit more experience with it before you just jump in and expect to get the benefits there. All right. That's Corny this week. Drought is causing a headache for Christmas tree farmers. So Halloween is still a little ways away, but some people are already thinking about the holiday season, especially if you go in stores. I mean, Christmas stuff's been out for almost a month now.
Is it really?
In some stores, yeah. I've seen Christmas decorations out and about. So Christmas in particular is a top of the mind for Christmas tree farmers like Steve Ottman. Pam Yonke, farm director for Midwest Farm Reporter Network, said Ottman has been in the business for his entire life. The Ottman family tree farm is located outside of Madison in Belleville. The latest U.S. Drought Monitor report showed as of October 7th that 6% of Wisconsin is in moderate drought and nearly 70% of the state is abnormally dry. I know we had a little bit of moisture there, but big trees have been okay. The new stuff they put in, they've probably already at that time lost 50%, maybe more, of new trees. So trees are very moisture dependent, especially when they're young. We'll know better in the spring after they go through the winter, but it's pretty dry even right now, and it's going to have an effect on the new stuff they put in. So Yonke said Ottman has planted between 42 and 47 acres that are halfway through the growth phase. She added that he also told her, due to higher fuel and labor costs, he's going to have to increase his tree prices for the first time since the pandemic. So the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Association has a list of available Christmas tree sites across the state. Yonke said the dry weather will also make fall foliage season shorter in Wisconsin this year. And I think we've seen that with some trees just dropping leaves without even changing colors. So
pretty much the whole northern half of the state is in the yellow in the drought monitor.
Right. And it is, it, there's still some colors. It's still, there's areas that are nice. I was up toward like Wittenberg not too long ago, and there's pockets of some nice color, but yeah, you can tell. I'm trying to remember where I was the other day, and there was a tree just like actively dropping leaves like nobody's business. It was in some sandier soil. It might have been over toward the Manawa area, but yeah. So colors may be harder to find this year, so might be a good idea to get out and try to see them now. Okay, we're going to wrap things up then with a Field Good Friday. So 128 drivers turned out for a tractor ride here in Seymour to support a farmer's cancer battle. The invitation came through the internet, and so this article is from a Seymour local, Susan Mansky. She was invited to join Al's antique tractor ride. Besides tractors, the ride also included trucks, cars, and doodle bugs. Don't ask me what a doodle bug is.
Yeah, what's sure.
I think, like, I'm guessing like a almost like a dune buggy type thing or side by side, but I'm not familiar with the doodle bug. There's an actual bug called the doodle bug. The starting point of the October 11th ride was at Al and Jean Timms Farm south of Seymour. Al, who organized the ride, told her it was a tractor ride for cancer, which he's been fighting for the last few years. Other tractors' rides in the past have been part of funeral processions for family members on their way to a final resting place. This day was to be a celebration of life. Al wanted to enjoy the tractor ride with his friends and family and not wait until they were escorting him to the cemetery. Early arrivals on the crisp fall day at the Tim Farm were treated to coffee, milk, and donuts as tractors began rolling in. Some of the machines were trucked in on trailers. Others from nearby farms were driven to the property. A guide pointed to the open field behind the farm buildings where the tractors would line up for the ride. The previous day, 84 tractors had RSVP'd, but they ended up with a total of 128. And actually, there, if you look up the article on Wisconsin State Farmer, Al's nephew flew a drone, and you can see some of the lineup of tractors. I actually came across the tractor ride that day. I happened to be moving some stuff, and
To wait for the procession?
I did, for a couple. They were a little bit staggered because, you know, some of the older tractors, some go faster than others. Sure. So it wasn't like they were in one big continuous line, but they had folks watching intersections for them. Actually, local gentleman with his dump truck was blocking traffic so that make sure that nobody ran into the intersection the same time as the tractors. And then one of Todd's clients was on a UTV while he's laid up and was helping with that.
Move traffic, yeah.
Yep. So
he would rather have been on the tractor, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm sure he would have, but that would have been a rough ride with his leg in the condition that it's in. So
no, this is a neat. This
one hits home literally.
Yeah,
right?
He's long time battle of cancer
for years,
and just what a cool way to. And like this, you say, to enjoy it, the time with all the people and that.
And the tradition in the family is the tractors take the hearse to the cemetery. That's the tradition in the family, is if someone passes away, that the living members drive tractors instead of cars. So it's neat. You know, Al wanted to be part of that, not
right.
You
know, well.
Living part of it.
Yes. Right. Yeah, which is neat. And in the amount of tractors that showed up, I know he wanted over 100, so it's cool to have that. And like you say, it was cool to see it.
Two and a half hour ride.
And I worked with Al for a handful of years, and I remember when his dad passed away, he was so excited about the amount of people that showed up with tractors.
Was it?
To take his dad to the funeral. So that I think that's why this was so important to him, is he got to see the outpouring of people when his dad passed away, and he wanted to be part of that when he can enjoy it.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about BMR and some potential ways to think about how you're going to replace it if it's something you use on your farm. In our spotlight, we looked at a new gene that could potentially triple wheat yield. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of BMR. Cool beans this week, as farmers are increasing cover crops in an effort to hopefully try to cut fertilizer costs and boost their soil health. That's corny, as drought causing some headaches for Christmas tree farmers. And our Field Good Friday was the 128 drivers that turned out for a tractor ride in Seymour just a short time ago. So thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.